Oh, thank you. I've got all nervous all of a sudden. Thank you so much for inviting me to come in and chat today. Hi, I'm Harriet. I'm a compulsive binge eater and restrictor, and a 100-pounder from London, England. I also class myself as being disabled. I have depression, anxiety. My mental health is sometimes okay and is sometimes not so good. Today is a good day because I'm here and I've shown up. If it wasn't a good day, you wouldn't have seen me. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how I got recovery and continue at the moment to stay in recovery, God willing, and how I've had to kind of flex that around my illness pretty much, and how it still continues to be a bit of a work in progress. So in terms of where I was, I entered the rooms in January 2021 via Zoom. I was in the middle of a mental health crisis at the time, and I was over 400 pounds, 30 stone, I can't remember what it is in kilos, but a lot basically. I don't know my starting weight because I didn't have scales that would measure me. But I had lost my job as a result of not going in, and I was at the end of 10 or more years of hitting sickness thresholds at work. In the UK, if you're off sick for a certain number of time, it becomes a disciplinary issue. You're only allowed to get sick a certain number of days a month, and if you are more sick than that, then it's a problem. And if it's a problem, they refer you to something called occupational health, where people ask you very invasive questions about your life and try and work out why you're so sick. And I'd gone through the process of, being labelled disabled and having to kind of work out what that meant for me and my identity. And it was a label I resisted for a long, long, long time. And I'd also had at that point of coming into program more than 10 years of therapy. And I was the least functioning I've ever been in my life. So where I started off was a pretty low bar to clear, to be honest. And I came into OA because my therapist at the time, who was an eating disorder specialist, said to me, "I'm really worried about you, and we only meet for an hour a week. And you need more support than I can offer." And, because I couldn't afford more than 1 hour a week. She was like, "I know you've always been really anti the idea of group therapy, but have you ever heard of Overeaters Anonymous?" And I was like, "No, what the hell is that?" And she was, because obviously I was very gracious at this point. And she explained it was like AA, but for people who had a problem with food. And I genuinely was kind of like, fine, whatever, I'll just go along and see, because at this point I don't see how things could get any worse. So I went to my first Zoom meeting that evening, and I binged my way through the meeting, had my camera off. And as well as binging, I also cried my way through that meeting because I thought there was going to be lots of really, really fat, sad people, and instead there were lots of really thin, happy, positive people. But they had all of these stories about when they'd been fat and sad like me. And it was the first time I heard other people kind of saying some of the craziness that was in my head, like it was normal. And I'd never even dreamt that other people would be thinking along the same lines that I did. I thought it was just firmly me and my craziness, and that was it. So that was my first meeting. I then had, I think, about a month, 6 weeks or so, of going to meetings, continuing to eat through them, continuing to cry through them. And at that point, kind of accepting that, yeah, you know what, this is probably where I need to be. Because at that point, I was binging and restricting, and I wasn't eating normally at all. Like, there was no normal eating patterns going on for me at all at that point. And in terms of getting abstinent, I can't really tell you anything about it other than it was a Thursday. And every single day, every single time I'd ever tried to do any kind of eating plan the rest of my 40 odd years on the earth, I'd always gone, "It starts on Monday." And for this, I got abstinent on a Thursday. I just woke up that morning and thought, just kind of, okay, I'll just see what happens. Let's see if I can just make it through today. And that was the first day. And then there was a second day. And then there have been quite a number of other days that have led on from that. And getting abstinent was one of the most difficult things I think I've ever done, because the great thing is that you get your feelings back and all of the joy and wonder and awe that I had been numbing out with my eating came flooding back. I remember crying at a cloud because it was so beautiful. Like, it was just so overwhelmingly bizarre. The problem is you get all your feelings back, not just to the good ones. And the negative consequences of that is I started to acknowledge and realize just how bad my feelings of depression and anxiety were when I wasn't eating over them. For me, I felt like my depression was something which kind of stuck up on me and pounced like a big jaguar or something, pinned me, knocked me flat, and then when it got bored, it slunk off again. And I never expected the stalking. It just seemed to appear from nowhere. This was different. This was more kind of constant and low lying. And I just had like a more generally lower mood, which it didn't feel like it came from nowhere. I didn't have as many kind of overwhelming days where I needed to just take to my bed and just escape from everything. It was just more kind of low level. And obviously my first thought was, oh, right, well, obviously I'm not eating the food anymore. And that's made me more depressed. And actually, over time, I realized that, no, this is actually what my baseline mood is when I'm not numbing myself out with food. It's a real shame. Like, you get a lot of clarity when I came out of the food and I didn't have all of that numbing. I have to say, though, that clarity wasn't always welcome. You know, sometimes it was about me actually having to accept just how out of control things had got and just how vulnerable and raw I was to life around me and trying to manage things. And that, as I said, has not always been an easy truth to swallow. But part of my recovery has been having to accept that I am who I am, and however much of me shows up that day is what we're dealing with. And that's just one of the things I have to accept about it. Then I got into recovery from being abstinent. I say, makes it sound so easy. Well, I got recovery. I worked my way through the 12 steps. As we all know, it's very simple, but it's not easy. And when I got into recovery, again, I got more depressed than ever. I was grieving for the food. It was the longest relationship I'd ever had, and suddenly it didn't exist anymore. And life carried on lifing. Hadn't expected that. Assumed I would get recovery, and everything would be all rainbows, magical unicorns, and sunshine forevermore. It was a bit of a surprise when it was kind of like, right, okay, you're in recovery. But life as it happens is really relatively unchanged. Like, my mental health didn't suddenly go away because I got into recovery. My toxic and very complicated family relationships didn't suddenly magically clear up. You know, all of the other things that caused me stress and anxiety, none of that disappeared. I was just in a situation where I had an idea, a better sort of idea about how I was going to handle all of that stuff so it didn't become overwhelming. And I really struggled because everybody who was telling me stories about when they got into recovery kept talking about all of this wonderful kind of recovery experience that they'd had, and I was there going, am I doing this wrong? Because I'm not feeling this. Like, I'm feeling like I've got my shit together a bit more, but I'm not feeling like the happy, joyous rainbow unicorn experience that people are describing. And it wasn't until I spoke to another fellow who also struggled with depression, who said to me, oh no, like, in terms of your food addiction, like, that's managed right now. Everything else is going to carry on as it was before. And it was such a lovely bit of reassurance to go, okay, cool, this is not just me. This is just me now without the food being a major problem in my life. I started to get physical recovery. I'm at the point now where I've lost about, I think it's about 140 pounds, 60 odd kilos. There's a lot more to go, but it's a significant amount that people have noticed. And they see me losing all of this weight after carrying it around for so many years. And they now assume that I'm super functional, that I am 10 stone less anxious than I used to be, and that I am more functional and like now super motivated and all the rest of it. And it's quite ironic that the more my outside appearance looks like I've got things together, thank you, Rami, the more I'm actually starting to recognize just how much work I still need to do on myself. But for the first time ever, my outside is not looking quite as dysfunctional as my inside. And that in and of itself has been a whole thing to try and do a bit of sort of mental hula hooping around for me. Because before, people would look at me and they wouldn't have very high expectations at all because I wasn't really mobile. But now people have more expectations of me of being able to do things. And that in and of itself created a pressure and a fear in me that people wouldn't recognize just how messed up I was. And they were suddenly going to have all of these extra expectations of me. And I did not expect that from my recovery journey at all. I did not expect to lose this amount of weight and still feel anxious about going out in public. I really didn't. I mean, I'm less anxious about some things going out in public. I no longer fear chairs with arms as much as I used to, right? But people are still out in public and I still have a big healthy fear of them with my social anxiety. And I didn't realize quite how much of it was going to be left over that wasn't linked directly to the weight. That was a bit of a surprise to me. And continues to be, because part of me, I think, thought, oh, well, if I lose all the weight, then I won't be anxious anymore. And no, it doesn't work like that. I'm still anxious, just in a slightly more concentrated package. Effectively, that's all that's changed. And it's just, you know, that again, that just juxtaposition of people thinking that I'm doing amazingly. And me really feeling like, oh God, no, I feel like I'm realizing for the first time just how anxious I get in these situations, just how easy it is for me to get overwhelmed and to sink into depression. And having to work out how to manage that has been a whole different ballgame when I've been out of the food compared to when I was in it. Because for the first time ever, I've got a really good understanding of how these things impact me. And I had to watch, you know, touch wood so far, I've not had issues with alcohol, but I definitely had to watch my drinking at some point because where the food was put down, when I was finding myself in social situations, I was just like, fine, wine will fix this. And it was becoming an issue. So, you know, that anxiety and that sort of deep level stuff is still there. I have had some fellows in program who I think were very well-meaning told me that if I worked my program more efficiently, then my mental health would get better. And I personally don't believe that to be the case. I think it's very well-meaning advice, but I personally don't believe that at all. I think that as far as I'm concerned, OA did exactly what it says on the tin. It helped me with my compulsive eating and it helped me to stop it where literally nothing else did. Everything else that makes up me and all of my complicated neuroses, that's all still open to play for, right? And that is still something that I have a lovely team of therapeutic and medical professionals. We're all tagging each other in to help out with that and to help me continue to grow and develop as a person. As for now, it's still very much a work in progress. There is still a lot of trial and error. All of the kind of truths that I thought I had about myself are still something that I'm having to review. You know, I was thinking, oh, I'm able to do this because I did it before when I was in the food. And sometimes I go into the situations and I go, nope, okay, no. Turns out I can't do this when I'm not numbing myself out with food and or alcohol. And so I have to get into that sort of headspace of going, okay, well, if I can't do it without the food, then I can't do it. And that's simple. And maybe that will be up for review in, you know, sort of 5 years, 10 years, 50 years, who knows, depending on how long I live, right? But at the moment, it's not for me. So I'm having not only to kind of recalibrate just how overwhelming I find all of these things, but I also have to kind of keep a more up-to-date list of what I'm able to deal with and how anxious I'll find it, because that is all based on bad data. All of these conclusions I've drawn about my ability to cope with stuff is based on all of these inaccurate readings. So for the last kind of 2 years of abstinence and recovery that I've had, it's been a very much a process of trial and error, and how I can work my program in a flexible way that it doesn't matter how many spoons or energy I'm dealing with on any given day, I am still able to do the absolute bare minimum to stay abstinent and to stay in recovery. And it took me a bit of trial and error to work out what that looks like for me. So, for example, one thing that I do every single day, no matter how little energy I've got, is I say some prayers. Very much. I also do a nightly inventory every single night. Now, sometimes I'll be completely honest with you. That is a tick box exercise where I go, am I resentful? No. Fear? No. Have I been honest? Yep. And sometimes it's much more, you know, more reflective sort of essay writing. Sometimes it is just a basic thing, but I have to do it every single night. I connect with my higher power every single day in some way, even if that is just saying thank you. I have to make some sort of contact with program as well. Now, sometimes that is opening up WhatsApp and reading the group chat messages. Sometimes it's not actually engaging with other people at all. And that's absolutely fine, because on my worst days, I'm not capable of doing that. I was speaking to people when I first came into the program, and there was somebody I joined with at the same time. We were talking about sponsors. She's like, oh, my sponsor's got me making 3 outreach calls a day. And I was just like, I can't do that now. Like, even in recovery and the most functional I have ever been, there's absolutely no way that my social anxiety will let me do that. You know, it's just not possible. So I had to find a way of working the program that wasn't just me being lazy and uncommitted and unwilling. It was actually me working within my physical and emotional parameters about what I could do on a day-to-day basis. And I'm really, really lucky that my sponsees, when I have conversations with them now, one of the big things that I start off by saying is, just so you know, I'm not necessarily reliable. Sometimes we'll arrange to have a meeting, and depending on where I'm at that day, I might have to cancel that meeting. I will give you as much notice as I possibly can. But one of the things you have to accept if you work with me is that sometimes I am not able to show up when I say I'm going to. And that is a really difficult thing for me to do. It makes any sort of service, sponsoring, even speaking at meetings like this, really difficult. Because when you are inherently unreliable, you've got to caveat the absolute ever-loving out of everything that you do. So you prepare before. I've made sure that I'm not doing any other kind of like big servicey style outreach sponsee calls today, so that I'm conserving energy for this. I've, you know, arranged stuff around it. I've got recovery time built in after this and for tomorrow. But it is one of those things that you have to get used to. And my whole life, I was very much like, I can do all the things. I don't need any help. Fierce, independent, absolutely fine. And program has completely pulled all of that and shown it up for the delusion that it was. I have 30 odd years of evidence showing that I can't get better by myself and that I need other people. And the more that I am honest and genuine about my vulnerabilities and my weaknesses, the more people tend to respond to it and actually give me the time of day. I'm still resentful sometimes about my ill health. But I have a lot more compassion for the person I was when I was in the food nowadays. I still have days now where I'm resentful that I can't do what I want to do, and I can't do things without planning them. I can't do this and I can't do that and yada, yada, yada. But I don't let it sit and fester like it used to. And I think those feelings of resentment are normal. I think that's part of the human experience, right? That we're just going to be pissed off about things occasionally. It's making sure that you don't fall into that trap of turning it into a proper pity party, because for me, that's when it gets dangerous. It's when it gets toxic. And that is what's going to drive the emotional intensity up for me. And that's what's going to drive me back into the eating. My absolute minimum every single day, it remains unchanged, but everything else is a bonus. Today is a good day. And that's why I'm here. And that's why I'm able to talk to everybody. Today is good. We don't know what tomorrow will be. But whenever you are trying to find recovery for yourself, you've got to find something that works for you in your individual circumstances. And there may be other people who kind of go, well, that doesn't look like recovery to me. That's absolutely fine. That's an opinion. All right. It doesn't have to be the one that you live your life by. And I found reaching out to other people who had similar experiences to me in terms of how they were able to cope with things so validating that it wasn't just me being unwilling.
Harriet, time's up. I apologize if you didn't hear my 2-minute warning.
Oh, I don't think I did. No worries. I'll wrap that sentence up. Basically, have some faith in yourself when it comes to what you can do for your recovery and what you can't. It isn't necessarily just you being unwilling. Sometimes it is genuinely that you're not able to. And talking to others can sometimes help you make that distinction. I'll leave it there. Thank you.